Good morning, Phil.
Thanks very much for joining me this morning. So what are the details of this preference deal for those who haven't heard the story?
Okay, that's a good question. It's a very good point, Phil, because it's a more rather than less intricate deal. So the Liberals have agreed to preference the One Nation Party in the upper house. That is the Western Australian Legislative Council, not generally, okay? So that's the first point. And secondly, they've agreed to do that on the understanding that One Nation will preference the Liberals in the lower house. So it's not a complete swapsie, all right? So there's a little bit of trickery going on there.
Yeah, okay. So that's an interesting flip there with the upper house and lower house. So what do you think the motivation behind this preference deal was for the Western Australian Liberal Party?
Well, their stated motivation, Colin Barnett has been very, very clear, is to win government, and more specifically, he said to keep Labor out of government. I will comment that we see a certain amount of desperation with incumbent governments that have been, political parties that have been in government more than one or two terms, where they start thinking, oh my God, we could lose the election, so what are we going to do? So they sort of pull out all stops, and I guess this is one of a very good example of that, where they're saying, okay, we're going to try and stitch up the election, which is, you know, fair enough. However, what they've done here is to say, well, and it's quite a sophisticated political move. They think, well, people will know that in the regional seats, in the rural seats, there's 36 seats in the Legislative Council in Western Australia. We're not, the Liberal Party isn't completely against One Nation, so One Nation Party's support is rising in Western Australia and more so in Queensland. So they're sending that message as well, but at the same time, they're hoping to garner a lot more seats, or the possibility of retaining some of their 39 seats that they hold in the lower house in order to secure government.
Right. Well, you mentioned
through the preferences of One Nation. Now, that's an assumption on the Liberal Party's behalf, I hasten to add, that the One Nation Party will preference them. I mean, the One Nation Party can say that, and as we've seen, we've already seen one candidate come out and say, well, I'm not going to preference the Liberal Party in the lower house. So, I mean, that's an issue for One Nation to sort out. But there's a bit of political messaging going on there, as well as a little bit of attempting to secure the seats in the lower house.
Mm. Okay, well, you mentioned that, it being an act of desperation, pulling out all the stops. It certainly does seem like a pretty desperate move, and it seems like it might have some pretty serious implications. What sort of implications does this move hold for the Western Australian election in particular?
Well, I think it's the point about this is that the actual preference deal itself, given its very intricate nature and the fact that it might not go ahead, is not so much about the Western Australian election. It's actually about the relationship between the coalition at the federal level and the kinds of signals it sends about the way that the conservative side of politics is reacting to the increased electoral support for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party more generally. And in particular, the Deputy Prime Minister, Barnaby Joyce, has come out and said that this sends very bad signals about the relationship between the National Party on the one hand and the Liberal Party on the other, and that if the Liberal Party is prepared to be as nonchalant about the nature of that relationship in Western Australia and say, well, you know, it's not really up to us in Canberra or nationally to decide what's going on in Western Australia, then it's saying something about the nature of the coalition, and that is that the coalition is more rather than less dispensable in the face of electoral realities. We have to remember as well, Phil, that 20 years ago when Pauline Hanson was on the scene, it was the then Deputy Prime Minister, Tim Fischer, who was far more vocally against Pauline Hanson, in particular in the wake of her maiden speech in the House of Representatives. And in fact, he could be read as being on the front foot as opposed to John Howard, the then Prime Minister, who was a little bit more recalcitrant in coming forward against what Pauline Hanson was saying.
Mm. Okay, well, that's definitely more positive to hear. You mentioned about the strain that this will put on the relationship between the Liberals and the Nationals. Do you think this could be the beginning of a fissure and eventually a full split between the two parties?
Absolutely not. No. There's no way that at any level, I think, that the Conservative side of politics is going to split in any particular state or territory electorate. In fact, it was only quite recently in Queensland that they formed they actually became the one party, the LNP party. In that regard, that's just not going to happen. However, we have to understand that the relationship between the Liberal Party on the one hand and the Nationals on the other has always been one that's been characterised by interesting amounts of tension over time. So, for example, the former Prime Minister of Australia, Malcolm Fraser, was infamously regarded by many people as an honorary National Party person. He was from basically the rural aristocracy of Victoria, and he worked very closely with Doug Anthony, his deputy from the Nationals, and there was a very real sense in which he was more of a National Party member than he was from the Liberal Party because he was from the land and so on and so forth. So there's always been interesting levels of tensions and personalities and also ideational politics between the two. On the one hand, you've got the Liberal Party, which I suppose traditionally represent, from Menzies' vision, an alternative to Labor in the 50s and 60s in suburbia, okay, but also the capital class of the classes of the cities. On the other, the National Party is the former Country Party of Australia, have very much always been interested in the interests of their rural and regional constituents. All right, so we have to remember that the first two parties in the Australian Federation were the protectionists on the one hand and the free traders on the other. So in that sense, the country parties always had a little bit more in common with the Labor side of politics than it has with the free trade side of politics that we associate with liberalism now. So there's always been an interesting relationship between the Liberals on the one hand, city politics and suburban politics, and the country party, or what we call the National Party, on the other. So this sort of little flare-up is an interesting example of that, but there's no way that we're going to see a split in the coalition over what is quite a trivial issue.
Yeah, right. Well, you've expressed your confidence in the coalition, but do you think there's a possibility that this instance with One Nation could prompt similar preference deals nationwide?
Yes, that's a very interesting point, Phil. That's a very interesting point. To the extent to which it sets a precedent, you know, in the contemporary political psyche, that it becomes more rather than less justifiable to do this. It's like, oh well, you know, you've got Arthur Sinodinos saying things like his minister for industry, and he's very well positioned in the New South Wales Liberals, saying things like, oh, One Nation is, you know, infinitely more sophisticated now than it was 20 years ago, and so on and so forth. Now, whether that is or isn't the case is a matter for argument. But what him saying that is doing is preparing the ground for making it more rather than less acceptable for the Liberal Party to say, oh, well, we're just going to, you know, make a preference deal with One Nation in the next federal election or the next election in New South Wales, where I hasten to emphasise we've seen on the back of high controversy around local government amalgamations, we've seen the first member of the Shooters, Fishers and Farmers Party voted into the Legislative Assembly. Okay, so that's the first time that that's happened. So there's a lot of ructions around the conservative side of politics. And what that actual conservatism as an ideology actually comprises. So Sinodinos saying that, sort of saying, oh, well, they're more sophisticated now, certainly opens the door a little bit, gets it ajar a little bit for those kinds of preference deals in the future. So certainly, yes, I agree with you.
Well, certainly it sounds like a pretty groundbreaking time then has been. Bly, thanks very much for joining me this morning to unpack all of this. Very complex stuff, and it's easy to ignore Western Australia. But yeah, it's very grateful for your insights.
Anytime, Phil, an absolute pleasure.